Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
Yes, I'm delighted, Caitlin, you're here. I know you to be passionate about diversity. I know you to be passionate about social justice. You have worked with people from the United States to Japan, so across the globe, and you also work with people throughout all strata of society, be it young people to get them back into education or training or employment, or top executives and to get their teams and themselves to be working at their best more of the time. And you will be giving us a talk on or introducing the latest, what you're up to with your work just now. And the talk is, I'm going to have a peek because it's a mouthful, Embodying Anti-Fragility in Leadership, Anti-Fragile Ways of Inquiring into Conflict. So I gather we'll be learning about how to stay curious. Please take it away.
So I'll be introducing my specialism, which is Clean Questions, developed by David Grove. And I'll be using three of those questions today. They're very, very simple. And we're going to use them to help you to get into your own bodies, to really get a feel for the difference between when you're in a fragile state, a robust state, or an anti-fragile state. And we're going to be particularly looking at this in relation to leadership. But leadership is a broad brush. So you can be a leader of an organization. Sometimes I'm a leader of my team. I can be a leader in a group. As a consultant, I might lead a change process. I could also be a leader in my family. And what I've found with developing this work is that the same skills apply in all of those contexts. So however you're defining your leadership role, then you can use that to frame the way that we're going to interact with these terms this morning. When I first came across Clean Questions, it was their simplicity and the state that they forced me to be in that was so attractive. I was a youth worker, and what David Grove had developed with Clean Questions was a way of inquiring into embodied experience and minimally disrupting it from the outside. So that, for example, if I have a young person and they come to me and they say, I'm completely stuck. I'm so stuck, miss. And I say, when you're stuck, what kind of stuck? When you're stuck, where is that stuck? Or is there anything else about that stuck? And at no point in those interactions between those questions am I an expert on their system. The questions are there to spotlight, to point, to elicit, and to help them to experience their stuckness in such a way that they can become more present to it, and that stuckness, as they become more enlightened, their systems can change, embrace the stuckness, they can bring in other resources and become more flexible. I didn't have the term anti-fragility at that stage. I was just taking these clean questions from a therapeutic context and applying them to the teenagers that I worked with, where I didn't want to be treating them like they were broken. I wanted to be with them while we learned together about the way our systems were organized. What started to happen early on was as the children developed models and embodied models of themselves, both at their best, at their worst, and they listened to 5 or 6 other people doing it simultaneously, their systems not only transformed, developed, grew, but they became better able to manage things out in the world than they had been before. And unbeknownst to me, they were becoming anti-fragile. And when they didn't understand each other, when one of them came in and said, stood too close to somebody, for example, and that child said, "You're too close to me." Instead of that becoming a conflict, which in the past with these particular teens could have been quite a violent conflict, somebody else might go, "What kind of too close? When he's too close like that, what happens to you?" And they go, it's like he's right on me. So, oh, that's interesting. And then it would become a theme and we'd all find out what was close or not close enough for each person. So points of conflict became areas of growth where we could transform, learn, understand our own systems and understand other people's systems. And this was revolutionary for me. I'd thought it might be good fun to do this. I didn't realize how extraordinary it would be. And then a few years ago, James Lawley introduced me to Nassim Taleb's work, Anti-Fragility. And I thought, that's it. That I didn't have a term then, but that's it. We're creating young people and systems where instead of being broken or damaged by the stress that they have so far encountered, we look at what are the things that have grown from that and how can we create the conditions for the individuals and the group to become more anti-fragile as they have stress applied to them. So what we're going to do today is we're not going to talk about it, we're going to have a go of it. And we're going to go through just these three terms. I could define it into greater distinctions on the continuum, but we're just going to look at fragile, robust, and anti-fragile. And I'm going to be asking you to think of a context and then a state. When you're fragile, you're like what? I'm going to do a little demo with Doris, and then she's going to ask me, because I unfortunately can't talk to all of you at once, even though I'd love to. But you can add your answers into the chat and I can always see them as well. And every now and then I might get a chance to ask a couple of you questions. So we'll be starting with, when you're fragile, you're like what? And fragile in this context, you could think of it like a wine glass. It's that you're going to be okay so long as stress doesn't apply in a certain direction or is unexpected. Wine glasses are beautiful for drinking wine out of. Not so good if you sit on them. So that's fragile. Fragile is where you can easily be knocked off course, broken, and you could be fragile in yourself or you could be fragile in a relationship. That if I give you feedback, it won't work for you, so I don't give it to you, but then I make up why it is that you always do what you do, and I'm making it up, but I never tell you. That relationship, the way I've held you, will build a more fragile relationship between you because I'm not just telling you things how it is. I'm not showing up fully. This is fragile. Then we're going to do robust, and then we're going to look at anti-fragile. And the question I'm going to have for you as leaders is, what needs to happen before you become anti-fragile? And when is it better for you to be anti-fragile, robust? When is being fragile fine for you? So it's not that they're better or worse positions, but they do different things. So when we're going to start with, when you're fragile, and I'll just ask Doris first. I can see Nanu saying frozen and useless. So I'm going to come back to that one in just a minute. And Sarah's got close to tears. Joanna's got small, vulnerable. We've got Katrina's vulnerable and stupid. Oh, I'd much rather go live with everybody. I'll start with Doris. So Doris, when you're fragile, you're like what? And when I'm asking her, you might, because this is embodied, I'm on a rocking stool, so you can see me moving around. So I'm sitting on my sitting bones. It allows me to really go into my body. You can either do this sitting, or if you want to, do it standing. Because when you're standing, you've got your, you can feel where your weight is. you've got your breathing, you've got your full body. So I invite you to make a choice of, would you like to be sitting or standing for this? So Doris, when you're fragile, you're like what?
I'm really brittle. And it's like I have a glass, very, very thin glass around me.
And I'm really brittle and a very thin glass around me. So what I'm going to do with my clean questions is I can take any of her words to help embody that state for her. So I could take brittle, very thin. I could take the glass, or I could take the me. When there's very thin glass around me and I'm brittle, what kind of me could that me be? And I'll just be applying those three questions. What kind of, is there anything else, or where, in any order, to some of those words, just to help embody that experience. And Doris, when you're brittle, what kind of brittle?
It's just any movement and I'll snap. The whole glass bowl will snap.
And it's very thin glass around her. Any movement and I'll snap. And when it's very thin, is there anything else about the very thin?
It will break. It's so fragile, it will break. So I'm almost preparing for the break.
It's very thin in any movement and I'll snap. And it's so thin, it will break and I'm preparing for it. So I'm just going to stop you for a minute, just shake that off a little bit. And then you could ask me. And audience, as you're listening, try those questions on in your own body with your own metaphor. So if Divya is weak, she can be asking herself, what kind of weak? Where is that? Is there anything else about that weak?
Okay, so Caitlin, when you're fragile, you're like what?
Like a hair trigger or a sudden whiplash.
Hair trigger or sudden whiplash. Now, where am I going to go to? Whiplash. Sudden whiplash. Is there anything else about that sudden whiplash?
Yes, I could get really unreasonably angry and just lash out.
Unreasonably angry and just lash out.
Yep.
And where is that? Where is that angry that you can get?
It's here, but it's in... It's like my mind is like that. So my heart's quite small and my mind's quite small and I'm quite dangerous.
Heart's quite small, head is small, and you're quite dangerous.
Yeah.
And is that enough? Or?
Yeah, that'll probably be fine. So let me just take a moment with everybody. Take yourselves into your own systems, into your bodies, however you're doing that. And when you're fragile, you're like what? What kind of fragile is that? And where is it? And is there anything else about that fragile? And when you're fragile like that, you're like what? Divya is saying fragile me needs a lot of care. I'm just having a standing on jello. And so if you're like Leona standing on jello, we could say to her, and what kind of jello is that jello? When you're standing on it, is there anything else about that standing? And so this is fragile. And as you think about being fragile, what happens before you're fragile? Catherine's like the paper thin tissue, like the paper of a wasp's nest. And take for a moment that sense of embodiment of fragile, and just let's just shake it off in it, whatever way you do it. I do it by moving, but you could do it by changing your breathing. You could do it by shaking it out. We need to disrupt those fragile chemicals. What we're going to do is we're going to go through a couple more embodied models. And then what I'd like to have is a discussion through the chat of what's some of the differences between them. So I'm enjoying reading your chat as well. What about robust? So in Talib's work, so if you're fragile, then pressure means that you break in some way or the relationship breaks. So if the stresses are applied, and if you want to maintain a fragile relationship, you have to maintain it. You have to hold wine glasses carefully. You can't balance them on the edge of things. You have to put them down carefully. And so we can have fragile relationships and we can maintain them. But you have to take care because they're fragile. Things that are robust, and I was thinking something more like, you know, a brick. Now you can sit on a brick. It doesn't change shape. So if something's robust, and we did a little exercise like this, and somebody had said, you know, when you're robust, you're like what? And she'd said, well, I'm a sturdy dining room table with chunky legs, and it comes from the solidity of the wood. So in Talib's work, when you're robust, you might be strong, you might be sturdy, but you don't change shape. And I had a little think about this for myself. In what context am I robust? So I don't think it's my best self, but it's the self when I'm absolute. I'm very clear. I see it in my child. If somebody does something that Grover thinks is unfair or unjust or cruel, he's incredibly robust. He's not in a learning mode. He doesn't want to change his shape. He's telling you that that is not okay, and that's the end of it. There is not a discussion. We don't do that around here. You don't treat your animal like that. Very, very clear. And he doesn't change his shape, and he's never changed his shape. So I'll just check with Doris. So Doris, when you're robust, that is when stress is applied to you in this context, you do not change your shape. You are, whatever your word is for it, but you are robust. So when you're robust, you're like what?
I'm like a big brass church bell, really solid.
And a big brass?
Church bell.
A big brass church bell, really solid.
Mm.
And when it's brass, is there anything else about that brass?
It's about that thick, and it's really dull, not kind of shiny, but just really.
And it's really
there.
And when it's really like that, and you're a big brass church bell, is there anything else about you when it's big brass and it's thick?
I'm solid on the ground. This is a church bell that's not actually dangling anywhere. It's on the ground, it's unmovable, and anything that gets thrown at it, it makes the bell makes a big clang, a real noise.
One of the things I'd like to invite you to appreciate is the shift in Doris's stance. So between when she's got thin glass around her and she's preparing for the break compared to this, I can see it in her, the way that she's carrying her shoulders, and I can't see her feet, but I'm going to imagine there's a difference down there too. And I think I can see from some of the answers that you're already getting this. So I don't think we need to do it. Well, maybe we do. Go on then. Ask me first.
When you're robust, Caitlin, you're like what?
I'm immovable.
Immovable.
Immovable, yeah.
Immovable.
It's not as nice as, I remember when somebody was teaching us Aikido, like years and years ago, about being able to, you know, where you can't get pushed around, but it's a bit worse. It's not quite as lovely as that. It's a bit more like a concrete wall.
And like a concrete wall. And anything else about that concrete wall that's your robust?
it's not very sensitive, but I am very strong, but I'm not, yeah, I don't really care. If so, you can run up against it and bang your head. I don't care. This is me.
And I can run up against it, and I think I can see that in your hand.
Yeah. It's always been my, it's probably not very good for me if there's any body workers, because I think my back is like a straight line.
I'll just try that on, yeah.
Preparing for impact. Yeah, but I'm immovable. So everybody else, just take a moment, whether you're sitting or standing, what's the best position so that you can experience when you're robust, you're like what? What kind of robust are you? And where is that robust? You might pay attention to your sitting bones if you're sitting, or your feet, or your breath, your attention. When you're robust, is there anything else about robust? When you do not change your shape under stress. I'm enjoying Claudia's, when Claudia's robust, I'm with me, I am not with others. Well, Nick, I can deny anything. And when you're robust like this, what happens next? What happens in you? What happens to your relationships when you are robust? Sarah's saying, I keep eye contact with the other person who will eventually look away. I'm dominant. And Catherine's like a mountain. And for Nick, when he's robust, other people become fragile. And Claudia says, my partner finds me a bit scary. Yeah, apparently I'm a bit scary too. But it is one of the positions in which I feel scary. I think, whereas when I'm fragile, I probably feel frightened and defensive, whereas when I'm robust, I think it's more, for me, it's more deliberate. So if that's robust, and Brenda's saying when she's robust, I have better relationships and I can laugh more easily with others. That's a benefit to her. And Tina is solid and focused, like a Maori warrior. You can just imagine that for a moment. And are there any costs to you when you're robust? If there are some benefits. So Leslie's saying, I process what's happening while holding my shape, and eventually the concrete evolves into something else. So she doesn't stay in that concrete, she evolves. And so, yeah, there are times when being robust can be a very, very useful state to be in. And it's certainly, I think in my personal development, I didn't have strong boundaries and as a youngster, and I really had to learn them. And in some ways I had to guard them quite carefully, which is why I'm maybe a little bit, I might need to just develop them a little more so that they're not quite so harsh to everybody else. Brenda's saying, yeah, she can be dismissive and critical. Nick's saying that if he gets robust, his wife can get more robust than him. So the relationship becomes more fragile. So let's just shake off that robust in whatever way, again, that you'd like to do it. Whether you need to move your hips like I do because my back's gone all solid, or you'd like to breathe differently. And then let's come to antifragile. Antifragile, it is a, to me, such an interesting concept that Tlaib's developed. And it doesn't mean, or the way I'm using it, I can't speak for Tlaib, but I know that some people have used it to mean, oh, we should be allowed to be horrible to each other because it helps us build our strengths. And that's not how I read it at all. What I read it as is that there are stresses and we need to be able to take those stresses, apply them into our system and to grow from them. The stresses don't need to mean that we become fragile. They don't need to become mean that we are robust, but in such a way that we can't learn from what's happening around us. That actually, and this was certainly true of the teenagers I worked with, and then subsequently the teams and the managers that I've, the leaders that I've worked with, is that it's often in small conflicts that we can either become robust about them, we can be fragile about them, we can go and tell our partners what happened at work, but not actually ever address it face to face. We can start to recruit other people if there's a conflict to back us up. Say, well, they did this, oh, they did this to me as well. And in those, we can get our strength from having recruitment, but what we're not doing is finding out in that moment, in what happened, in those conflicts, what could we learn? Are we open to growth? Have we reined our horns in like a snail and got into our shell? Or are we out? And if we're out, what has to be true before we're open to being anti-fragile? The place that I've been playing with this particularly has been in my relationships in my family at the moment, because we're politically a very divided family. We have some fierce liberals. We come from a grandmother who was still protesting on the beach, fighting against state and religion, schools and religion needing to be separated. And then I've got very, very strong pro-Trump law and order, all lives matters, ends of the spectrum. And so when I see them, particularly if social media, but also sometimes in person, posting to each other, what I notice is that they are becoming more fragile or more robust in their interactions. And what they're not doing is finding out what's important to one another. They're not finding out where this is coming from. They are ceasing to be curious. And that got me really interested in this. So I thought the one thing I did with the teenagers when I first brought clean language to my teen groups was I fostered curiosity. And because clean questions are so neutral, they are simply exquisite attention on what is. So if a child says, I'm stuck, and you say, what kind of stuck is that stuck? There is no sense that the child needs to be unstuck or should be other than they are. But in the blessing of attention and the working out how it works, the child's system could grow and shift, and he could become curious about it. When he became curious about it, the system could learn again. And there's something about going from this digital, if this is broken, it's bad, it's wrong, to how is it broken? This is interesting. How does it work? When is it stuck? When's it not stuck? Became more analogued, more antifragile, and able to grow and also to shift and change. And what I'm interested in is, can we put ourselves in a more antifragile state so that obviously we can stay robust when we need to stay robust, but when we could do with being curious, interested in this situation, growing out of it, then we could be like what? So take a few moments to think, when are you antifragile? When there's stress applied to your system, when do you grow? When do you get strengthened by that stress? So you could think of antifragile, metaphors for antifragile could be muscles, lots of natural things. You know, you work them, they the stress is applied to them, and then they grow stronger. Or babies learning to walk. You know, it's not useful to keep your baby safe, completely safe, when it's learning to walk. It needs to bang into things. It needs to fall over. It needs to pick itself up again. Those are all parts of the growth of that system. So when you're anti-fragile, you're like what? I'll just ask Doris. Doris, when you're anti-fragile, you can stand or sit, whatever's the best space for you.
I'll get up again. I'll do the standing bit. When I'm anti-fragile, I'm like a cloud, a lovely, movable, shifting cloud that can just absorbs everything, but doesn't turn into a nasty thundercloud.
And a lovely, a movable, shifting cloud. And when it's lovely, what kind of lovely?
It's just nice to look at. It has different colours, different hues.
Again, just keep an eye on her body. It's highlighted. Just in terms of, if we could just pull out those three little bits of when she first answered, the difference in what's happening in her system in order for it to process like this.
Yeah. And it's spacious and kind of slow moving, and
it's spacious, it's slow moving, it's lovely to look at, and a cloud. And when there's a cloud like that, where is that cloud?
I think I'm kind of in it or sitting on top of it. I'm not sure. But it's, and I can see it. So it's a bit of all three.
And I can see it. And it's lovely to look at. And is there anything else about that lovely?
I just want to take a picture of it. It's like, wow, there's power. It's elemental. It's part of the elements.
Lovely. And I'm just noticing, I won't be able to do both things at once. I'm noticing in Doris that from the any movement will break this thin glass around her to her robust, and then to this, the bell that's on the ground that doesn't move, and then to this, both in her system and in her metaphors, that it's this cloud that's moving and that's lovely to look at. So just noticing that she's got a, what's that called when it goes from one side to another
spectrum?
Side. She's got a spectrum, yes. Now I'm half thinking, I wonder what my spectrum is, but I can't think about that and answer the question. So
would you like to ask me to ask you as well?
Just ask me when I'm anti-fragile.
Okay, so when you're anti-fragile, you're like what?
I have to go, when I'm anti-fragile, there's a lot of space. So there's space in my heart, there's space. I'm able to be with, it's like a yes and. I'm with them and I'm with me. I know me, but I'm interested in them. It's quite still and there's a lot of space.
A lot of space and a yes and. And when there's space like that, is there anything else about that space? Yes,
it's rich, and it's rich and it's absolutely true. Like, I don't mean true like that's the truth. I mean, this is just as much, even if I haven't got it yet, it's as true as I can make it in my perception. I think what I'm trying to say is I'm very present. I'm present to what is, as far as I can tell.
And present to what is. And when you're present, where is present?
It's sort of, it's got a radius. So I'm present here, but I can, it's a bit like my chair as well. I can go in lots of directions, you know? Mm. Yeah.
So okay. I'm just noticing, Caitlin, you were, let's check out your spectrum. You went from whiplash and really angry and to concrete?
Because I'm very small. I remember now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Heart's small.
Small in your heart. Small. Yeah. And to the concrete, people can run up to you and bounce off, and really rigid in your back.
Yeah.
To spacious and present.
Yeah, mine's to do with it's to do with, because it's to do with space. Yeah, my spectrum's all about space.
All about space.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lovely. So if everyone else just takes a moment, and I can see that some of you are already answering.
May I just remind everyone, if you'd like to send your message to panelists and attendees, the default in Zoom, unfortunately, is panelists, so only panelists can see it if you've selected that. Please just remember to select above your message, panelists and attendees.
But I can tell you some of them that only went to panelists. Is that Tamar or Tama? When I'm anti-fragile, I'm like a stew, which is able to contain more and more flavors and ingredients. And a unique and good taste is created. I just thought everybody needed to hear that one. So when you're anti-fragile, so just take a moment to spend some time in your body. When you're anti-fragile, you're like what? Where is that anti-fragile? And what kind? And I'm thinking it's going to be whatever your words are now. So what, if it's Doris, it would be movement. If it was maybe space. And what kind of a is that when you're anti-fragile? And is there anything else about you when you're anti-fragile? And when you're anti-fragile, you're like what? I saw somebody who said that they're like the bed of the ocean with the waves going over, and they're just accepting and holding. And Claudia is full of laughter and energy and joy. And if you're going to use your clean questions away from here, you could say, well, when you're full of joy, where is that joy? And what kind of laughter? And when there's energy, is there anything else about that energy? And Avisha is a cat. We can say, what kind of cat? When you're a cat, is there anything else about that cat? And Fatansala is a horse. Again, what kind of horse? Is there anything else about that horse? So as you think about your models, your experience, your embodied experience of being anti-fragile, when you're anti-fragile, what happens next? What does you being anti-fragile make possible? So Joanna's heart is open. Nick's eye becomes us. Divya is accommodating. And for Marta, it's connection. Kazwa's chest is open. And Catherine's staying in relationship even when it's difficult. We could ask her, and when you're in relationship, is there anything else about in?
Do you want me to answer that? Is that just rhetoric?
just rhetoric.
Okay.
And Sarah, I can be wrong, but not sad or mad about it. Just take that as an idea for a moment, to be wrong. So I can be wrong, and I'm not sad or mad. We could ask Sarah, and when I'm not sad or mad, what happens next? And then that's all very lovely. Are there any costs to being anti-fragile? Can there be any downsides to it? Because, well, that's one of my questions. I thought, I've learned to do this. How come suddenly, every now and then, I was writing nasty little responses to things? Or I can come in and say to my child, what are you doing on your phone? You're supposed to be doing your homework. And unfortunately, my children have been trained and they say to me things like, do you want to be in contempt or would you like to ask me a question? Which is brings me back into, oh, yes, yes, yes. I've had some training. So what are, if any, costs to people? So Avisha is saying sometimes other people want to fight. And Claudia is saying, there's a lot less costs to being here than there is to staying here. And Simon says, you have to risk changing your mind. And when you change your mind, was in the NLP terms, you can change your mind and keep the change. Then what happens? Yeah, Nick's got some good advice. He says, never share this with your kids. It's important. It'll only come round and then they'll help you grow. So what has to be true for you to be anti-fragile, for those benefits to happen? When Leslie's just put in one that I think is interesting, that others might, when you're anti-fragile, you stay curious. For some people, they'll think that it's not affecting you. They might not notice. Some people are saying it, people might think that you're soft. And so there can be. What you may not be doing is registering the signals that other people are used to. They might not know that they've really, really annoyed you because you're not going into a robust or fragile state. You've done something in your system to stay curious. And so sometimes you may, when you're being anti-fragile, you may need ways to keep your boundaries. You may need ways to give feedback, so that your anti-fragility doesn't become a liability or that other people don't misread it. So that's certainly a change that I then had to make when I realized that what I'm doing doesn't look like what I'm doing when other people are not in an anti-fragile state. If other people want to fight or other people want to win or to be more robust, then I might need to shift what I'm doing. So then as leaders, take a moment to think of yourselves as leaders. And when you're leading from a position of anti-fragility, then what's possible? Just take a moment. When you're leading from a position of anti-fragility, what can happen next? And can you be anti-fragile on your own, or is it useful to train others around you in some anti-fragile skills? So I'm thinking about Nick's suggestion, don't teach this to your kids, which I know he's doing tongue in cheek, but it is also a high demand. And once my children understand anti-fragility, and my work, obviously that's Talib's term, my work I call systemic modeling, is that systems model themselves and each other. So you get a system of individuals models and as well as your individual system. But it is a higher demand. My children would not accept from me that I would come in and say, why aren't you doing your homework? Without a single question. It's not permitted in this place, it's not permitted. And also I have to then prepare them that the world doesn't adhere to those rules, that teachers will do that with them, otherwise they'll get themselves into trouble at school. Then bring back to you as a leader, when you lead from an anti-fragile place, what could happen next?
And I'd just like to give you a notice on the time.
Yep.
And I've noticed as everyone is thinking, I'm kind of really deep into this now. So we have about 8 minutes for questions. If anyone would like to add more questions to the Q&A, please use that button at the bottom of your Zoom screen. There are three in there already. Would you like to?
I'll start with Nat's question. Mm-hmm. So Nat's asking about metaphor. That sometimes when you ask clean questions, people have a metaphor and sometimes they don't. And how could you lead them more towards that? And one of the things that David Grove always said, he said, when you ask a clean question, you have to be an equal opportunity employer of whatever answer you get. And so if they say, when I'm anti-fragile, I'm all over the place. You say, and you're all over the place. What kind of all over the place? I'm in many points simultaneously, and I can see the world from many perspectives. And you're in many points simultaneously. And that's like what? Well, it's like many points simultaneously. So it's important that we don't use the like what metaphor to say your answer is not good enough yet. Because for some people, they don't draw the world into metaphors like that. Those points simultaneously, that's it. That's as good as it gets and it's perfect. So I'm afraid, Nat, I can't tell you much, but as a general rule of thumb, if you ask, it's to do with adjacency. So if the kid says, I'm stuck, what kind of stuck? Is there anything else about stuck? Or very close to what they're already thinking. Whereabouts are you stuck? It's pretty close too. So maybe ask 3 or 4 clean questions to get them interested in their stuff. And then you might say, and when you're stuck and it's here and it's in your feet and it's here and you're in your feet and you're stuck, that's stuck like what? And then you can build them up to understanding a little bit more about the metaphor. And then Claudia's asking, so I hope that's enough. I think that somebody's just put in the chat. So that if you, right now, the way I'm using the clean language, I just wanted to be quite clear. I'm using it in a one-to-one-ish sort of way. I'm slowing my voice down. It gets a little bit trancy. And that's absolutely fine for here. We're all agreeing that we're going to get embodied. But if you were going to use this in a team, if I was using this with the teenagers, that wouldn't be appropriate because most people haven't signed up for a change program. They've probably just come along to, I don't know, a session on something. And so then I would use my language in much lighter. I wouldn't ask more than 2 clean questions in a go. They might say, oh, I'm stuck, kind of stuck. Oh, it's like I'm rigid. So you're rigid and you're stuck. And is there anything else about you when you're rigid? Yep, I don't move. So he doesn't move, he's rigid. Who's different to that? That's the pace at which I would talk in a group. A couple of questions, leave them be, go to somebody else. So I just wanted to be really clear about that. If you want to use your questions to deeply explore something, get some training. Make sure that you know where you're going, because if you're going to take people into things, you need to make sure that you can come out. And really importantly, with anything like this, you make sure that you've got a contract, that people are here, they're happy to discuss this, and they're happy to go with you. Then Claudia's saying, how can I stay more often in anti-fragile? So let me ask all of you, how can you stay more often in anti-fragile? What are some of the things that support you to be anti-fragile? For me, it's making sure I've got maybe a buddy, not accountability, that sounds a bit too robust, but more just somebody who really loves me and has my interests at heart, that I can say, oh, I'm having such a hard time with this person, and that they can then help me move through it and I don't feel judged. I think I saw one of you said, I feel anti-fragile when I'm in a therapy session and I know there's no judgment. Sue says mindfulness and grounding. I think those are excellent, excellent practices. Yoga for some people I know, Aikido. So a practice, Claudia, that's what I'd be doing. Do it regularly, not too often. I mean, you've got to have some time off. I don't think I could be anti-fragile all day. Every now and then, it's much easier to just think that you know what somebody's thinking and just judge them. It's not very useful. It's not very kind. It doesn't help me. I don't grow out of it. But sometimes I just need an hour off. That's what television's for. You're welcome. And Doris? Yeah, I'm just checking timings.
Yeah, we have 8 minutes left. Shall I just tell people about your books and then we can see how, if there's time, or would you rather answer a question?
I've got another question back again. So when people aren't anti-fragile, what are some ways that you could interact with them? Ask them a question, change your body state. Are there any ways if somebody else is being fragile, is there a way that you can be anti-fragile around them without rescuing them, without deciding it's not okay for you to be like that, I will help you, for I am more enlightened than you are? Because the minute you've got that sort of feeling about your behavior, you aren't anti-fragile now. You're probably a pain in the backside. But what you're doing is going, I'm okay, you're not okay. And that's not the way that, certainly within the clean and systemic modeling, we're using this as I'm okay, you're okay, your stuff's okay, my stuff's okay, I'm interested. So I'm just thinking, if you've got somebody in your life who is more fragile, what could you do to stay anti-fragile when you're around them? And I'm just thinking, Doris, you can answer this as well. Just while people are thinking, you could answer this as well. What do you do if you're around somebody who's being fragile? What do you do to stay more anti-fragile?
I think I really, I have gained a lot from consciously connecting with my body and breathing. So just really reminding myself to, breathe out longer than I breathe in, and just activate that state of calmness in myself, because that way I can lead with my body.
So that's you go with your breathing and then you can lead with your body.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
And then I have space in my head to just think, okay, what could be something useful that I could say? It means I stay calm and grounded. And it gives me space to think, and people pick up from other people. They pick up the bodily states, somatic states. Mm-hmm. I think it has the effect that people also hopefully calm down.
And I'm just looking, Nick's recognizing is that if you think they're not okay, you're probably not okay. Mm. Something not okay in your system too. I'm just looking at Miri's question. Would it be okay to ask an opposite metaphor so as to get to the core of the actual feeling? I think that these are all things that you can experiment with. And that's one of the joys of clean questions, is you can apply them to almost anything. So if you've got what kind of, where, is there anything else, and like what, then you could go an opposite, the opposite to anti-fragile. A metaphor, when I'm opposite to that, I'm like what. So you can just experiment and play with these, especially if you can find a partner to practice with. That would be wonderful.
Great. And I'm taking a deep breath now and keeping a beady eye on the time. And I would like to, before I ask you the final question and we wrap up for good, thank everyone who participated in the chat and for being on the panel as well. I think it was a really, really inspiring, thought-provoking and, talk that also my body resonated a lot. And if you would like to continue the discussion, please join the coffee breaks that can be accessed through the portal, or join the Facebook group, the Embodiment Conference Facebook group, either the one for this channel or the big one. And if you're like me and you cannot possibly split yourself in more than one person, and there are other talks happening which you'd like to watch maybe at a later point and you'd like to digest at your own time, please do consider buying the full library. You can have access for life. And yeah, it will also support Mark Walsh and his team in offering this for free for 48 hours. And maybe it also helps you to kind of choose where would you like to go next in your personal development? What's a modality you haven't heard of? You can really have a browse through there. I've certainly been inspired by some people I've seen on here. So yeah, please do consider that. And there's a special offer on still 50% while the conference is running.
Do we need to say about the offer for if you're interested in finding out more about Clean?
Yes, and Liana has put that in the chat earlier on. Caitlin is offering a 15% voucher for Clean for Teams, an introduction to the work that she's demonstrated today, as well as an introduction to Clean language, or rather a core training for those of you who work one-on-one and are interested in doing that. Please go to the website and there's the voucher Embodiment 15 and you'll get 15% off until the...
Those of you who want to take it a bit further and get your skills up to scratch. Yeah.
And I will plug them anyway. From Contempt to Curiosity, and the drama-free workbook, which is really great for getting you up to speed with your anti-fragility.
Thank you for all your questions and comments. It's really lovely. I know I can't see all of you. I wish I could, but it's really, really lovely.
I'm really sorry we couldn't answer all the questions. There have been so many contributions. Thank you all. But to wrap up, Caitlin, this is a question all of our presenters get. What's your top tip for staying embodied?
What first came to mind is get enough sleep. Get enough sleep. Be peaceful. Wake up refreshed. For me, if I haven't had enough sleep, I'm all over the place and not in a good way. So that's mine. Make sure that your body is rested and that you're ready for the next day.
Thank you. Get enough sleep. That sounds like a great idea. And just a reminder, we have many more sessions coming up today. We have Bonnie Bainbridge-Cohen, David Berselli, Brooke McNamara, Judith Aston, and Alanis Morissette and Dan Siegel later on. I'm sure this will all be exciting stuff. And I hope you all get a lot out of this whole conference and will take some of the questions that you've learned from Caitlin into your life and just have a go, explore.
Lovely.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.